Hey everyone, it's the Kung Fu Genius, aka Alex Richter. And I just want to thank you all for your tremendous support here for this podcast, both in the audio format and on YouTube. If you're looking for an easy way to support this podcast, please consider joining the Kung Fu Genius Patreon. You can support for as little as $5 a month and get access to episodes a few days early. Higher levels of support will even get additional goodies, exclusive content, and even your name in the description. The baller level of support will give you the opportunity to be Dre for a day and give me a rest from this guy here. A link for the Kung Fu Genius Patreon page is in the description below. You can also support us by subscribing to the Kung Fu Genius on YouTube, liking this video, and sharing it on your social media platforms. And with that, let's get started.
All right, peeps, on today's episode of the Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be answering all sorts of hot nonsense from YouTube. Lots of gems, lots of fantasy kung fu characters, lots of, yo, dude, you know, the triads got paid less than the prostitutes on Enter the Dragon? Let's get to it.
He is unstoppable, unbeatable, unbelievable. He's Alex Richter, the Kung Fu Genius.
And every day, I practice martial arts. What's up?
Word is, I'm a Kung Fu Genius. Practice all day like a genius.
Yo, Dre, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm groovy.
You look like you're going to be in a Boys to Men video. What's going on today?
Boys to Men. ABC.
BBD. Mm-mm. That's what's up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have like the no tie thing. Like, so you look, you look like you're in some men's choir or something.
I thought
like
we were still doing the battle.
No,
the suit battle.
That ship has sailed, Dre. That ship is over. All right. It's docked. It's done. All the passengers are off. And you are definitely not going to work after today's episode because you're working here today at City Wing Chun.
I know, because it's Monday, but I had the perfect excuse why I put the suit on.
Right. Yeah.
Last night I wore this yesterday to work.
Oh, I got it.
And
so you just never went
rushing
to sleep.
Out
got
the house
it,
and I couldn't figure out what to wear, so I just threw the shit back on.
A little known fact, people don't realize that you work as a male stripper and you have to come in wearing some normal clothing and people are like, who's this guy? And then the music plays and you start doing your thing.
Jumping out of cakes.
That's right, jumping out of cakes. So here we are with another AMA. So let's get to it, man.
Yes, let's get to it. Let's get to it. To set it off, we got Ground Dragon Martial Arts. Ground Dragon Martial Arts is asking, I'd be curious to your thoughts on this, Alex Sifu.
All right.
This is by no means any hate on HK Cinema, but at what point is the Chinese martial arts community going to start vocalizing that kung fu in a fight does not look like Shaw Brothers movies?
This is a conversation that's 40 years too late. This is why they don't even make classic kung fu movies anymore. So I suppose he's not talking about modern Hong Kong cinema. I don't really know any practitioners of Chinese martial arts, whether they're from Hong Kong or they're from the Western world. Mm. I should say serious practitioners of Chinese martial arts who think that a fight or a kung fu exchange is supposed to look like what you see in a Shaw Brothers film, right? Lots of pauses and loud noises and stuff like that. So I don't know. I mean, I suppose...
When I was a little kid, I thought fights looked like
that. Yeah, but then you become an adult, all right? Yeah. And so I think most people who teach martial arts, Chinese martial arts...
Some of us do.
Are adults, so I would assume they have gone past that phase of, you know... Can people actually jump over buildings and, you know, fly through trees like in Crouching Tiger and stuff? So I think maybe a better idea is, whether some people in the Chinese martial arts community are really going to, you know, wake up and realize that a lot of their kind of very cherished ideas about fight stopping maneuvers are not necessarily going to deliver as promised, right? So, you know, the whether you can really just simply go in and do this one simple movement and that's really going to stop someone who attacks you very suddenly or whatever can happen. But there's an over-reliance on these kind of things, like especially people who think like, well, if someone comes up to me, I'll just... And you always know there's a problem when someone tells you the set list of techniques they're going to do to someone if they're attacked, all right? Then you go, if fighting is chaotic and fighting is... It's an adaptive kind of organism where you need to adapt on the fly and change according to how your opponent moves. So every time someone says like, yeah, well, you know, if someone just pulls a gun on me, it's just like, you know, pack Buji, cut him in the throat, do this one move, go kick him in the groin and then do, you know, the chop choy and go on one knee and punch him in the side. And then you go like, I don't think you've ever actually done that to someone.
No,
all right.
No.
And it's a difference between, you know, doing fast, explosive movements on willing students or willing training partners in class. And now someone pulls a gun or knife on you on the street. And now you're going to, you know, Buji to the eyes and then grab that handful of sand that's in your pocket and throw it at his face. Take one knee, punch him in the groin and then do, you know, a double jump kick and knock him out. Or even if it's just I'm going to Buji him or whatever. It just doesn't sound like that really comes from experience. It sounds like it comes from a lot of wishful thinking. So I would think probably the better question is when are practitioners of Chinese martial arts going to kind of get over this? I'm going to throw this set list of movements down no matter what you do, and that's going to take the person down rather than fighting from a principle or concept-based way of moving. They're still stuck in techniques and an over-reliance of techniques. I just saw a post from a Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner in Bellevue, Washington. He's a police officer. His name is Craig, I think it's Haunani. I might be getting his name wrong. Mm-hmm. He's a police officer. I think he's originally from Hawaii. He's in the Bellevue, Seattle, Washington area. And he's big into jiu-jitsu and he's big into like testing, you know, like the methods and, you know, practicing striking and jiu-jitsu and like weapons retention. And
testing how?
Like, you know, with his partners, like, okay, like really resisting him full power. And another thing he does is he does his training in his full police gear.
Okay.
So that, because obviously that changes things when you have a belt and you have mm-hmm. bulletproof vest and different weights, stuff like that, are you really able to do these things? And he had a great quote the other day because he was doing some like knife retention where he just had someone just trying to just straight stab him with a, of course, with a, you know, a trainer knife.
Yeah.
But the guy's really coming at him and he really has to, you know, try to go two on one and try to stop it or whatever against a real fully resisting opponent, not against this, oh, I'm just going to pack sell Buji this guy with a knife and he's going to turn into, you know, like the Wicked Witch from The Wizard of Oz is just going to turn melt into a bunch of mush, right? And he had a great quote in there. He says, like, everything works. I might be getting it wrong, but it was something to the effect of, like, everything works and everything fails, right? Everything works and everything also doesn't work, right? But that's true, you know, because, like, obviously a well-placed Buji, to quote those guys, to the eyes. I mean, how many times do fights stop with eye pokes and in UFC, and how many times is that a problem? It's a big problem. But you have to be very accurate to do that against someone who's charging you. Mm-hmm. And to do that in the moment that the fight now or that the altercation becomes an attack. You just preemptively hit someone in the eyes. You're the person doing the assault, all right? And then that bridge between, like, we're shouting at each other and now suddenly someone takes a swing, that's the moment you have to then decide to do it. And that's not the moment someone is going to suddenly do this. In their mind, yes, but in practice, no. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
I think that's what they call accidental eye pokes, right?
Yes. Yeah. Although unless accident. But if you're John Jones, you're doing them on purpose.
Oh.
All right, let's go to the next one.
All right.
Language, please. Jeez.
I mean, oh, darn. All right, next up. I just remembered I got to throw away my pocket full of sand and just...
That's right.
Just give it up.
Yeah.
Iggy Powell.
Powell?
Iggy Powell.
Powell?
Iggy Powell.
Okay, all right. I'll take your word for it.
No, I'm reading it.
All right. Well, I'll take your word that you're reading it.
I'm reading it.
I can't see the screen, so I'll take your word for it.
I would spell it out, but...
Yeah, some letters in there you don't know.
It's literally how it's spelled.
Got it.
So, hello from Ireland.
All right. Ireland's in the house.
Back in the early days of Dudes of Kung Fu, you spoke a bit about Yip Man documentary you were working on, or you were in the process of making.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still in the works? Congratulations on a terrific podcast. It's rare to hear such an open-minded approach to kung fu and the martial arts. Go, rabbit mouth, I got. Thank you.
Fantastic.
I, I really don't know what he wrote there, though.
We probably need to have Mikey Dean look at that. That's some kind of Irish thing, right?
Would you like to have a look at that?
I would love that.
It's not the same language, but we do have a Brit here who might be able to decode it.
Right there for you. I feel like Robin from Howard Stern right now. No, yeah, you're right, though. It is Irish.
It's Irish.
But I'm not going to try and pronounce it.
No.
So, well played for trying to
pronounce it. All he will say is, it's an older code, but it checks out.
Yes, that's right. I was about to clear them.
So my long-awaited, at least in my mind, Yip Man documentary is still in production. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, with the virus of unknown origins, everything is delayed.
Okay.
So, it's one of about... realistically, right now, between my books and things that I'm doing with the school and stuff, I have about 9 projects right now. And but those are 9 projects I'm going to do. Mm. And the Yip Man documentary is one of the 9. Mm. I don't know when, but it's one of the 9. Mm. And every time something's on my project list, it gets done.
It gets done.
That's all I'm going to say.
All right. That's all I'm going to say about that.
That's what's up.
All right. Next up, we got Retro. Retro cereal. I wanted to say real cereal so bad. Big fan of the podcast. You obviously know a lot about BL and JKD.
Mm.
Has any of the philosophy of BL and JKD or any of his criticisms towards traditionally kung fu caused you to modify your training in WT? Why or why not?
That's a good question. So BL being Bruce Lee. All right, for those who don't know.
I thought it was bad liver.
Bad liver. All right, that would make sense. That would make sense given your work.
Bad liver.
Obviously I'm very heavily influenced by Bruce Lee. He was one of my he's basically the reason why I wanted to do all this stuff. And I've spent a fair amount of time reading Bruce Lee's philosophies and his ideas behind Jeet Kune Do, and I think that it would be silly for me to say that my more open-minded view of looking at martial arts in general wasn't influenced by the writings and the teachings and the ideas of Bruce Lee. His criticisms of traditional martial arts are, I think, just as valid now as they were back then. You even see modern martial arts, even within Brazilian jiu-jitsu, although it's less rampant there, but you do have some strains of Brazilian jiu-jitsu that are a little bit more conservative in terms of their method and approach and don't like certain more modern Brazilian jiu-jitsu methods. And you start to see these kind of things of orthodoxy and even in the so-called more modern martial arts, right? It's this kind of a human mindset. And so I think that it's one of those things that when you see it, you know, the things that Bruce Lee was talking about the crystallization of a system as being an end product, which no longer allows for exploration. I think once you see that as a problem, I think it's like, you know, we say you cannot unsee it.
Mm.
And so I think that 100% influences so much of how I look at things. But I also surrounded myself with other like-minded people. Now, WT, the Leung Ting lineage, has... outside of WT is a bit of a mixed reputation for either being like very big sticklers in the way that they do things or some other people think that they're just kind of doing whatever they want, right? And to a certain degree, I think both observations might be correct given the context. But if you spend time with Sifu Leung Ting, I wouldn't say he's the most open-minded in terms of like running his association or he's the most open-minded in terms of his interpersonal relationships, but he definitely has a very open view of martial arts in terms of like someone can be good and effective and not from the Wing Chun style, and mm-hmm. you can admit that. And also he calls out a lot of this BS within the Wing Chun family and people thinking that just by doing things in a certain traditional way, that means that it's more correct. And like he's very fond of saying, you know, who cares how traditional you are if you get beat up? And so I come from a classic WT lineage, a classic Wing Chun lineage, where our teacher says stuff like, who cares how traditional you are if you get beat up, right? So I wouldn't say that I come from like a super, super conservative, you got to do it like Sifu or you're completely wrong kind of lineage. So the lineage that I'm from is also to a certain degree somewhat supportive of that. I say somewhat, all right? They also have their issues as well. But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely influenced by that for sure.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Awesome. Next up, we got Willy Wonka. Willy Wonka is back.
Yeah, there's only one Willy Wonka, though, and he's dead.
Oh, darn it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dang.
Mm-hmm. Gene Wilder, all right?
Yeah.
Johnny Depp can never be Willy Wonka, I'm sorry. And I think they're going to remake that damn movie again.
With who?
I don't care, but it doesn't matter. They shouldn't do it. It's like remaking Enter the Dragon. It's like, you don't do it. You just don't do it. You don't need to.
Or Point Break.
Yeah, or Point Break. Or Total Recall. Here's my fantastic new movie. I don't recall.
Someone did do the Total Recall.
I know. Someone did. Yeah.
Your boy. As well. Your boy, actually. Isn't he one of your boys?
Yeah, Colin. Yeah, what's his face?
Colin Ferguson.
Colin Ferguson. Oh my God. Turd Ferguson.
We just have Northern Irish man ask a question, right?
You know, right.
And you're just like, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm very careful because I don't know whether Colin Farrell is Northern Irish or Southern Irish, but either way, he's not Scottish.
Right.
Ferguson.
Enter the Dragon should never be redone.
No, they've Ferguson. Talked about it, but I don't think they're going to do
the
it.
The Last Dragon should never be redone either.
No, nor should there be a sequel to that movie. sorry, Tymok. I know that's your dream, but sorry. All right, let's continue.
All right, from Willy Wonka. Any more information on Bruce Lee's connection to the Triads? He was friendly with actor, fighter, Chan Wai Mun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's your boy.
Who was a notorious Triad member and also were many of the extras on ETD, Enter the Dragon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. He might not have been directly involved with, but ran in the same circles. Any more details?
Well, I mean, it's difficult because all of this stuff is speculative, right? And was Bruce Lee...
Triads exist, though.
Yes, triads exist, but I mean, if they're... Okay, if you have a number of triad bosses who run certain companies in Hong Kong or whatever, and you happen to have to do business with them because they're the only people that run those businesses, right? Does that now make you a triad by association?
Mm.
No.
No,
you can't.
Roll with,
no.
You don't think?
No. You don't. You're not Chinese enough.
You gotta be Chinese enough.
For sure. You can become a member of like the Hongmun. Well, the Hongmun is the original. The Hongmun are like the grandfathers of the triads. The original Samhapui are the Hongmun. But they have those societies here in the U.S. You have them in Chinatown. They've become Freemasons. And
what?
So, yeah, the Freemasons and the Hongmun have kind of melded together, basically Chinese Freemasons.
What?
But that there is a long cavernous gap between being, because they've taken non-Chinese members because it's a Freemason thing.
Mm.
So you can be a member of the Hongmun. There are lodges there on Mott Street in Chinatown. You can see it, right? There's technically the original ones, right? But I mean, what is this? A bunch of old dudes hanging out and playing cards or whatever. Like, there's a cavernous gap between being a high-ranking member of a Hongmun association here in the U.S. and being part of like 14K in Hong Kong. All right, like this is not the same. Okay,
not the same.
Not the same. Okay. So
damn.
So there are. I mean, look, triad involvement in the film industry is something that seemed to have become more of a problem post Bruce Lee's time period. They were always somewhat involved, but don't forget at that time there was really one studio that controlled all the films, and that was Shaw's. So what triads are going to come in and tell the monopoly what he can and cannot do on the studio that he owns the land for, all right? So this idea of all this triad involvement in the films became more of an issue when the big studio system started to break up and you started to get smaller and smaller studios and independent studios making movies. Now the triads can come in and say stuff. But I mean, Shaw owned not only his studio, but all the land there. So who's going to go there and say, like, hey, man, you need to pay us money. Hey, screw you. I own the land. Get off my land. Yeah. Right. So this idea that, like, you know, the early 70s film industry was completely overrun by the tribes is not 100% accurate. Later in the mid 70s, later 70s, 80s, for sure. All right. You have, you know, in D&B films, and let's not forget one of the guy who later became a big film producer, Charles Hung, is one of the biggest. His father, I believe, is the founder of the 14K.
Mm.
All right. Mm. Now, it's widely speculated that he is the current head of the 14K. But of course, he doesn't admit it. His father was the founder, and he pretends like, oh, well, it's family business, but I don't have anything to do with it. And everyone kind of is like, yeah, all right, whatever. So you want to go down a rabbit hole. Betty Ting Pei married Charles Hung after Bruce Lee passed away.
Gotcha.
All right.
Yeah,
and so
this is a rabbit hole.
That is a rabbit hole, right? And, you know, there, I have heard that they dated before. So Betty Ting Pei dated Charles Hung before she had her affair with Bruce Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's not, I don't know if that's, I've heard that. I can't say where I heard it from because it's a trusted source. But outside of the person who told me, I've never actually read or seen about that anywhere. But let's say, okay, they dated before and then they don't date. And then Betty has a really high profile boyfriend who, you know, happens to be Bruce Lee. And then he dies in mysterious circumstances. And shortly after, Betty marries Charles Hung, whose father happened to be the founder of the 14K Triads, which is one of the biggest of all of them, right?
Okay.
So outside of that being kind of a coincidence or whatever, does that prove anything or any involvement in Bruce Lee's death? I would say no. But if you want to spin a yarn that very clearly Charles Hung wanted to have Bruce Lee killed or whatever, this is very easy to do. The problem is that people are pattern-seeking primates, mm-hmm. all right? And obviously, sometimes, all people are. Sometimes things are really obvious, they're right in front of you, and sometimes it just takes a mild nudge to connect a couple dots, and then you go, see, it's so obvious. But who's connecting the dots? The storyteller. That doesn't mean that it's true, all right? It doesn't matter if it sounds plausible, all right? It matters only, is it true, okay? Tunwaiman, Michael Chan, was a friend of Bruce Lee's. But when you say friend of Bruce Lee, was Bruce Lee hanging out with Tunwaiman every day? No. They met each other a couple times. They were acquaintances. And Bruce had purportedly a lot of respect for Michael Chan. And Michael Chan, to this day, has nothing but nice things to say about Bruce Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Tunwaiman was a police detective before he became a movie actor. And he was essentially thrown out of the police force for being a triad.
Okay.
And he was kind of the guy who ran Kimberley Road down in Tsim Sha Tsui. That basically had one road in Tsim Sha Tsui that was like his street.
Mm-hmm.
That was Chan Mai Mun's road, right? Kimberley
by the
Road.
Mall.
Yeah, by the mall over there, right? And, you know, running all those businesses and stuff like that. And he's kind of old school. There are a bunch of interviews with him. Obviously, they're only in Cantonese, but he talks about, you know, that the modern triads are nothing but a bunch of thugs. And he said in the old days, they were all also the triads were not just called Hak Se Wui. Hak means black. Se is society. They call like the black societies, right? They don't really call them Samhap Wui. That literally means triads, but that's actually an older name for it. And the term triad was, I think, coined in the 1800s by a British researcher because the original Hongmun had, you know, they believed in heaven, man, and earth. These are like the three things that need to be harmonized, right? And those are like three points. And those three points became triad, the Samhap Wui. The three is to harmonize like man, heaven, and earth together, right? So the harmonization of these three things is kind of later what created the term triad. Although originally these were anti-government societies, they were not yet criminal organizations. But once the Qing dynasty had been overthrown, these anti-Qing associations no longer had a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So they then became essentially modern criminal syndicates. And starting mostly with things like extortion of businesses and things like that. But then, you know, expanding into drugs and heroin and other things as well, bootlegging, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Now it's, I think a lot of triads are doing kind of more high-end crime, but there's still some extortion problems in Hong Kong and things like that. So anyway, Chan Wai Man basically said in the old days, they would call them bong wui, which means bong is to help. He says because they would help each other like brothers. And he says, but nowadays they're just a bunch of thugs, right? So were there certain dealings that maybe Raymond Chow had to give certain payoffs or whatever? Yes. But that is kind of, you have to imagine, that's just the cost of doing business, all right? If you run a business and a certain type of business in a certain area of Hong Kong, you may have to pay some kind of protection fee to some guys. And but that's part of the cost of doing business. Does that mean now that the business owner is a triad? No. All right. So I think that it's like people want to make these connections when like they are the triads are both part of Hong Kong life in the 70s and also so normal that it doesn't mean that if you have to deal with them, that means you are one. Right. So I think that there's like it's very inconclusive. Certainly Bruce was not did not go into an initiation ceremony and was not a triad himself. But, you know, whether he had to sometimes pay tribute or his company had to pay tribute, you know, perhaps, all right, perhaps Concord had to give some money, perhaps Raymond Chow had to give some money or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this idea that Bruce would fight them tooth and nail to give them any money, and that's the reason why he was killed, is just repurposing Game of Death, the theme, the plot line of Game of Death, as if that somehow was Bruce Lee's life, all right?
Okay.
And people are confusing all sorts of things that have nothing to do with each other. So anyway. Mm.
Interesting. Interesting having the extras on ETD.
Well, a lot of those guys that were hired, they were just, you know, they were just street guys. They needed bodies, some people who did martial arts. But so much has been said about that, which just gets overblown.
Mm-hmm.
Because triads are like they have lots of different ranks, all right? You have like the red pole and the grass sandal, and then you have all these different ranks when you're coming up the triads, right? And there are a lot of triads that are just at the lowest rung.
Mm-hmm.
And these are guys who just do grunt work and they just do some low-level extortion, but these are not guys who run anything, right? Mm-hmm. And you got those grunt guys everywhere. And a couple of those grunt guys happen to be extras on Enter the Dragon. It's like, oh, they were like as if somehow like those guys are the equivalent of Al Capone or something like that. It's like, no, these are just some low-level street guys. These are not powerful people by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh man. Okay.
If they were powerful people, they wouldn't be extras in a movie. Yeah. Where they were getting paid less than the prostitutes got paid to be in Enter the Dragon, and we get out of here.
It's
way too much said about that whole thing.
Okay. All right. Enough said. Say no more.
Delay no more.
Delay no more. All right. Next up, we got.
Uh-oh. It's another word.
Dicefut Dreisen.
Dicefut Dreisen. Big ass Dreisen.
Dicefut Dreisen.
Sifut
means ass. He changed his name, but he kind of changed his spelling, too.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Dreisen, you know, kind of strikes me as the kind of guy that would, like, change his name, but he wasn't smart enough to do it in such a way that we would think that it was somebody else. I think he's trying to be somebody else here.
It's possible. So Dreisen now is a Dicefut. He's a big ass Dreisen.
I guess.
Big ass Dreisen.
Let's see what's happening here.
Very big ass.
All right.
Hey, C-Dai.
C-Dai, younger Kung Fu brother. Makes sense.
Let's say hypothetically, as a hypothetical, of course. You're teaching a class and suddenly the walls start to rumble.
Okay. Just happened before here at City Wing Chun.
You're teaching a class in San Francisco.
Right.
Yeah. You're being invaded by another school.
Okay.
That made the walls rumble?
Yeah. It's like some Big Trouble in Little China
Rumble
stuff
in the Bronx type shit.
Right.
Through your doors appears none other than a young David Henry Hwang.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
and his colleagues include Choy Le Phut, William Chung.
Charlie Fett is not a person, it's a style.
This is what I'm reading.
All right, man.
I'm reading this.
You know what? I can tell you're actually reading. So I think Dryson now has a YouTube handle.
He always did, no?
No, yeah, I'm not sure about that. I've never once seen you actually read anything.
I searched for it and I couldn't find it.
Yeah. I found it.
Got it.
Yeah, oddly enough.
Oddly enough.
Okay, a Shaolin warrior monk.
Okay.
Moi and Yim Wing Chun, all in their prime.
So David Henry Hwang.
Yeah.
All right.
A young
David Henry Hwang. Choy Le Phut.
Choy Le Phut, the actual C-Phut.
There's no such person named Choy Le Phut. All right, okay. Who was the third one?
William Chung.
William Chung, okay. Who's the fourth one?
A Shaolin warrior monk.
All right, so a fairy tale character. And who else? Is that it?
Moi.
Moi, another fairy tale character.
And Yim Wing Chun.
Even another fairy tale character. So about half of the people coming in here are fairy tale characters.
But they're all in their prime.
Prime fairy tale. Yeah.
No, well, they're in their prime, so they're not fairy tale at that point.
Got it.
All right. You know Huang's secret identity, obviously. And he informs you that they have traveled through time to test the value of Wing Chun in the modern age.
Okay.
He reveals that your wife has been taken hostage.
Oh, jeez.
And the only way to get her back safely is to challenge one of them to an MMA-style duel till one party concedes.
All right. My wife would be so pissed.
She must win.
She'd be like, do you know how much time we wasted with me being kidnapped?
I don't think you actually need to do anything. I think she could probably talk her way out of it.
Yeah, I think my wife would beat the ass of anyone who tried
seriously.
To...
I don't think you'd have to do anything.
All right, so I have to fight one of them in an MMA-style match and win to have my wife released.
Yeah, and remember... They're all taken from their prime age. If you try to call the police, you'll find that your phone doesn't work around time-traveling Wing Chun icons.
Wow, this is a well-thought-out hypothetical. All right, so I have to pick one of them, right? All right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait,
well,
so who would you pick to battle?
Okay.
And why? Or perhaps in what order of preference?
Okay. So, Moi and Yim Wing Chun, I'm not going to fight women, okay?
You sure?
Doesn't matter. No, they're too vicious, all right? okay. So, they're off the table.
Okay.
Okay? A Shaolin warrior monk, this is like fighting a pixie. This is not a real thing.
Okay.
I have a feeling that is a... That is a red herring, all right?
Okay, all right.
No.
No.
All right. All right. William Chung in his prime? No. He's too tough.
Okay.
David Henry Huang's a playwright. He's not Bruce Lee.
You won't fight Choy Le Phut?
Choy Le Phut is not a person, okay? And if it's a person that represents the collective style Choy Le Phut, I certainly would not fight that. So leave that one out there,
okay,
right?
Okay, gotcha.
Oh, no, here's the quote. The irony is that Choy Le Phut actually is a taekwondo black belt.
yeah, I know. It's like, sorry, the wrong answer. The right answer was Choy Le Phut. It was a taekwondo black belt from a McDojo.
Right.
Okay. David Henry Huang is not Bruce Lee. He's a playwright, all right? I'm pretty sure I could beat his ass. In an MMA rules fight with him in his prime, I'm pretty sure I could beat his ass.
You might get distracted by the tooth.
I might. Like, wait, I think it's the wrong tooth, right? Definitely right. David Henry Huang.
All right. That's the one you'll be taking.
I beat that ass.
Yeah. All right.
There you go.
Sounds like
there's
a plan.
The answer.
All right.
All right. Next one.
And he said, thanks, Dai Si Moi.
Dai Si Moi. The eldest younger sister. It doesn't even make any sense.
Well. Kind of.
All right. No, it doesn't. It actually doesn't make any sense. Unless you just had so... Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Yo, Dryson is wild, man.
Yeah.
Dryson's been taking mushrooms.
Yeah.
Good old Dryzen.
Hey, Kung Fu Genius listeners, are you a fan of Wing Chun Kung Fu? Well, if you listen to me, I assume you are. I got great news for KFG fans. Right now, you can get an all-access one-month free trial subscription to Wing Chun Illustrated Magazine. Yes, I said free. Go to WCINewsstand.com and register in the upper right-hand corner, fill out your email and password, and use the code KFGTRIAL to get your free trial to all the issues from 2011 to the current issue. That's right, all the issues, even the one with this cool guy on the cover. That's me for those of you listening to us on audio. My Kung Fu Genius column is also in all the new issues, as if you needed another reason to get this awesome magazine. Go get your free trial subscription today. For all that information, check out the description below. And now back to me.
All right. Next up, we got Pretty Fly for a Filipino Guy.
Back in the house.
All right. What's your favorite still image of Bruce Lee? It doesn't have to be the most iconic, but an image of Bruce that had the most impact on you. Mine would have to be his Poon Sao picture with Grandmaster Yip Man, because it reminds me that Bruce was once a beginner.
Uh-huh. Well, that's amazing, because Bruce is so, it's difficult to answer because Bruce is so prolifically photographed, yeah. Right?
He always had a photographer around.
Yeah, and there's always people taking photos, yeah, and everything. No, it's typical because it depends. I like that there are different photos from different time periods, I think, which kind of are classic to like the various time periods. I think that, I don't know, for me, it's not so much a still shot as it is it's a still from one of his films, from Way of the Dragon, when he goes out on the balcony and he does the Cobra pose.
Oh, Cobra is like, classic.
For me, that's just like, wow, when you just see his lat spread,
yeah,
and that's pretty phenomenal. I think, like, I look at that and I go, that's like, wow, that's like, you know, you put that on your wall.
That inspires
like,
you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm. As a Wing Chun practitioner, you know, old school Wing Chun practitioners do the Cobra pose because the lats and the triceps get developed
flared
from the type of Chi Sao and chain punching that we do. So, and he had, like, in my opinion, the king of all Cobra poses. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that would be it.
That's a good one. Thank you, Pretty Fly, for a Filipino guy. Next up, we got Charles Watts. Alex, I love your podcast.
Thank you.
If you had the chance to spar with Bruce Lee in his prime, what strategy would you try to use to win? Take care, Dr. Charles.
All right. That's so funny. It's like all the questions are starting to morph into the same thing. Whether he's disguised as David Henry Huang, or it's a real, what would you do against Bruce Lee?
Yeah.
Well, sparring is not fighting. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the writer's martial arts credentials are, right? But I think
that's a good point.
I think a big problem for people who don't do martial arts or don't understand martial arts is that they think that sparring is a battle that needs to be won. Now, in some schools, it is that way, right? You have this in kickboxing, karate schools, and Wing Chun schools, jujitsu schools, that every time you fist bump your partner and you go to spar, this is basically a full-on match. You're just going to call it sparring, right? Sparring is practice, all right? Sparring is where you allow yourself to test your skills under pressure and against someone who's resisting you, all right? But it also has to still be done in such a way where it's
teachable moment.
Where you're learning something out of it, right?
Yeah.
So if you're just trying to wail on your partner and your partner's just wailing on you, you are not working on any of the skills that you're weak on. You're just trying to do your best against someone else who's doing their best, and then this is not sparring. This is just a fight. This is just an ego contest disguised as something in training, right? So I kind of find that ridiculous, actually. The question is kind of ridiculous. If I were in a situation where I, whether it's going back in time or whatever, I'm able to, put on some gloves and have a sparring match with Bruce Lee, how would that not be one of the most teachable moments you could ever you could ever have as a martial artist, especially as a Wing Chun practitioner in your life, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously, because I have background in some boxing and taekwondo and other movement arts. You know, I'm not going to stand there in front of him and just try to chain punch him, right? You know, move back and forth and see what his timing is like. Use an orthodox stance as opposed to a JKD style right lead. But still with the benefit of some of the things, knowing some of the things that he did in JKD, but also some of the things that they do now in like modern mixed martial arts, and have a fun sparring match with someone who no doubt can teach me something and I can learn something, right? And if he, you know, if he hits me up and, you know, like he's piecing me up and tagging me up as we're moving, that's a teachable moment. I go, okay, like, even if you're using this more modern mixed martial arts style of movement in front of Bruce Lee, these are the things he would have done. Because people always want to know what would he do, you know? Fake a jab and shoot in for a takedown and see what he would have done against that, right? But not because I need to beat him, all right? Can you imagine, like, you grow up, I can't imagine what kind of strange person you would be to grow up idolizing someone only to have a sparring match with them, and the only thing you care about is defeating them. Can you imagine, like, I clip Bruce, and then he stumbles on the ground, I get on top of him, and I'm just, like, imagine that could even happen. Like, what kind of weird person would do that? You know what I mean? Like, what kind of...
about it.
What kind of ego problem would you be suffering from?
Oh, man.
For that to be the case, right? Man. I would love to, like, you know, basically kickbox with Bruce, but in a more orthodox, modern, mixed martial arts way of doing it, against his right lead JKD style, and see how he dealt with certain things, maybe mix up some different types of grappling attacks in there and see what he would have done against it, and then also have a chance to do some chi-sao with him and feel what his chi-sao was like. And because I want to know the experience, what I could learn from how he would react to certain things, what he would do, and what his notes would be on a Wing Chun that's now 50 years in the future. You know what I mean?
Got it.
You couldn't help but learn from that situation, but think, like, what tactic, buddy? I don't know, get a gun, shoot him in the foot? I don't know. It's not my style. It's not my style. I'm a student. I'm not a, it's not about, you know, stop caring about who can beat whom when I was a teenager. I mean, at some point, that knowledge doesn't make you better. That knowledge doesn't make you better. All right. And if someone can beat someone, that doesn't mean that that someone has something to teach you. The only thing you learn is that person is mortal like everyone else. But I don't care about that. I care about what's the lesson. What's the lesson? Mm-hmm. All right, I'm a martial artist. I'm a martial arts instructor. I want to learn something. I want to improve. And get beat up. Who gives a shit about that? All right, because the fighters all have their day, and at some point, some new young blood comes, and they're the next one. This life cycle happens to every single fighter. So does that nullify the lessons that that fighter was able to teach? Because now some young buck came in and kicked the shit out of them? Stupid. I don't know. Kind of ridiculous.
All right. Moving right along.
All right.
We got Chris. What were the most inspirational or unique training exercises and approaches that you've found in your interactions with different Wing Chun Sifus? Did any fundamentally rework how you approached your training?
I assume he's talking about people who are outside of my lineage. Well, it's difficult to say. I mean, because you always have takeaways whenever you train with different people, and even sometimes just watching different instructors and listening to what they say and what they teach and what their focus is on is can always be quite instructive. And I think people are always looking for, I think part of the issue is that people are always looking for these big wow moments to happen every time they see an instructor or train with someone else. And sometimes what do you get from training with different people from your same style, right? Well, sometimes you get confirmation. All right. I mean, sometimes you train with someone who comes from a different lineage of Wing Chun, for example, and you hear some of the things they say or some of the things that they emphasize, and you go, well, like, out of these 10 points that they emphasize, 7 of them we also do. All right. And then, like, where do people freak out? They freak out about the 3 that are different. The three that are different are like, oh my God, but this person said these three things and we don't even discuss that, or we say that those things are no good. And then everyone wigs out about those differences. And I go, the dude had 7 points that are totally that totally concur with what I learned, let's say, in the WT lineage, right? And for me, that is instructive, because then I go, those things where we all overlap is probably closer to the truth, because those are the things that we all share in common. Mm-hmm. But what do people do? They fight over those three that we do differently. And so I think it's a matter of perspective, right? Then you can look at those three things that are done differently and you can go, okay. And I'm just using that as a very broad example, because to say, like, if you had 7 things in common out of 10 and people freak out about the three, I think they're kind of missing the point.
Yeah.
All right. Because those 7 are probably closer to the universal truth of either martial arts or your particular martial art, in this case, Wing Chun. Those three, you can go, okay, do we not address these things or believe in these things because we have something else we do instead? Or are these things that are not addressed at all? Or are these things that we categorically think are wrong in our style, right? Mm. And then you kind of can start to put those things into a category. One of those three is like, is it wrong? Is it something we just don't address? Or is it something that we do differently? And then already by putting it in one of those three boxes, you can then probe a little bit further. Well, why do we think it's wrong? Is it really as wrong as we think it is? Or if it's not something we address, should we? Mm-hmm. All right. And if we do it differently, is the way we do it better than this way? Because then that allows you to start to look at these things a little bit more objectively and not to just go, oh, they're different, and then futz about those kind of things, right? Like, for example, there was in the European Wing Chun, the old style European Wing Chun ground fighting thing, right? Which we've talked about before. When you're on the ground, the other person is standing, right? What do? We try to stay square. And if the person gets too close, we're going to try to kick, create space, and try to get up. That is a pretty smart strategy for being in that position. I mean, you want to get up. You don't want to stay on the ground. If the other person's standing, you want to figure out a way to stand up. But one of the things when I trained with the Valenti brothers is they addressed something else. I mean, obviously, they're from Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, so they knew more about the grappling stuff, right? But they had another situation, which is if the person backed up and then charged you. And if someone does that, you can't do the simple kick to the front leg, because now the guy's running at you and you don't know which leg's going to be in front by the time they get there.
Mm.
So they had this totally different tactic that they used, which I was like, oh. And it would be easy to say, like, if you were a real hardcore Wing Chun WT, like, traditionalist, you'd say, no, we don't need that because that doesn't, you know, you put it in the category of it's wrong. But why do people put it in that category? Because it's different. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't say, okay, is it wrong? It's like, is it really wrong? Is it something we don't address? Or is it something we do differently? Those are the three questions you should ask about those things, right? And they would normally reflexively go into the it's wrong category, right? Which I would only put it in there last after I had looked at the other two categories first, right?
Okay.
And then I realized, no, this is actually a situation that wasn't being addressed in the European set up there, because the assumption is your opponent is always kind of hovering above you, so you got to keep them away with kicks and try to stand up. But the guy could back up and try to run, and you might not have time to get up in the meantime, so you would need an alternate tactic. Well, that made so much sense, I literally incorporated it into the training here, right? So that's what I look at. Like, if I train with I trained briefly with Sifu Jim Rosalando, he showed me his Pin San Wing Chun and showed me those techniques. It's the old village style Leung Chang Wing Chun. I looked at that and I go, like, okay, are the things that we do differently, is it because this is something we do it differently? We handle the same problem with a different solution.
Mm-hmm.
Is it we don't address this problem at all and we have to figure out, should we? All right. Or is it just categorically wrong in terms of the way that we would otherwise choose to move, right? And so most of the stuff that I saw with, like, the Pin San Wing Chun is we just handle it a little bit. Like, the things that were different, we just do it a little bit differently.
Mm.
It's not things that we don't address. It's things that we do address. And they have one way of doing it, and we have a similar way, but maybe a slightly different body mechanic. So then when you start looking at that, you don't sweat that stuff. And all the other stuff that you do the same, you say, oh, well, these are the things where we overlap, right? So you need to ask better questions about the things that are different about what the other person does, and not always expect that automatically assume that someone from a different style has so much to teach you and automatically assume that they have nothing to teach you, right? Because people are on both sides there, right? You just look at the information in a very objective way. Train it, try it, and then think about those three things, all right? And then that'll give you a better assessment of how to contextualize this information for what you do, rather than just assuming everything someone else tells you is new and great or everything someone else tells you must be wrong because it's not from your style.
Mm-hmm. All right. Cool. I must say.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I try my best. I aim to please.
I've just realized that, you know, I feel like you're going to knock on my door and ask me if I've heard the good word.
You do look like a Bible salesman today, I must admit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Elder Dre.
Yeah, Elder Dre. You just need your name tag there.
My mom was a Mormon.
Really?
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you my Mormon story in Germany?
All right. You should.
Well, I don't know if I ever told it on the podcast. All right?
I doubt it.
So I may have told it on the dudes. I don't know. Anyway, if I told it before, I apologize. So I'd been living in Germany for about a year. That's when I was training Wing Chun at the castle. And I got an apartment. It was like a completely furnished apartment. It was very cheap, but I live near Heidelberg. Well, Heidelberg is like a university town, right? But I didn't live like in the main part of Heidelberg. I lived like in this little little village section of Heidelberg called Ziegelhausen,
which Ziegelhausen.
You go right into the hills, right?
Sounds like a hamlet.
Yes, a hamlet, right? And you had to, like, you know, it was a very quaint little town, but it had, like, you know, it had one bank and, like, a little post office and, like, a bakery. It's a very small place, right? Mostly just residential. You kind of had to drive up a hill and you had to go up these windies and twisties.
Windy road.
But I, quite frankly, for Heidelberg purposes, I lived kind of in the middle of nowhere. Like, I didn't live near any major thoroughfare, right? You would have to really go way, way, way off the beaten path, right? Mm. So it's like really nowhere in Heidelberg, right? But it was nice. It was, you know, I came from being here in New York. So it was like very peaceful. I lived on a block where it was quiet, fresh air and everything like that. Oddly enough, there was a Corvette on my block, which is very rare to see a Corvette in Germany. It's very rare to see a lot of American cars.
Just parked.
Parked there, and it had, I shit thee not, Dre, Washington State plates. Ooh. In Germany. It was just parked on the side of the road and had Washington State plates. And I was like, how does this thing even get on the road in Germany without this thing being arrested?
What?
All right.
The car would have my dad's Corvette.
I have no idea, right? So anyway.
Was it Spokane?
No, it's just a Washington plate.
Oh,
right?
Damn.
So anyway, I'm in the middle of nowhere. No one really knows where I am. I had not really brought any of my training partners to my house yet. No one knew where I was, right? Mm-hmm. But it was a nice little apartment. And one day, it was probably the weekend, I was home. I didn't have any friends for a little while. Someone rings on my doorbell. And mind you, Dre, I'm in Germany, in a little tiny village, in the middle of nowhere, and no one knows where I am. Right. And so I live, it's a multifamily home, right? So someone had to specifically ring my doorbell, right? And so I open the door, and to my surprise are two American Mormon missionaries.
Yeah.
And they are, you know, wearing their shirt with the little name tag and everything like that. And they, you know, they have to go on a mission, I think, when they're 18. And they go out into the world and they try to spread the word. Like, remember in Hong Kong, we ran into those guys. That's another story. We'll tell that one on another podcast.
I was there for that
one.
Well,
yeah, I always tend to run into the Mormon missionaries and always have a really good time with them. Not from their perspective, but from my perspective,
yeah,
right? And so I open the door and these two American Mormon missionaries there with their shirt and the name tag. And everything like that. And they, well, one thing about those Mormon missionaries is they really do try to learn the language of the country that they go to.
Okay.
All right. Like our Hong Kong story, which was quite funny, right? With that one missionary told that Chinese guy's Chinese was good, right? And he just looked at him like, I am Chinese. What are you talking about, right? So anyway, they in German, they say, like, you know, they have whatever their spiel is, right? Hello, good sir. And this is all in German, right? Hello, good sir. You know, could we take a few minutes of your time to talk to you about, you know, the, I don't know, Yoda or whatever. I don't know what it is, right? Whatever it is they talk about, right?
Yoda.
And so I pause and I look at them. because they don't know that I'm American. They assume that I'm German.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're in Germany. This is the middle of nowhere.
Uh-huh.
And I just pause and I look at these guys. And I say, how many fucking miles do I have to travel to get away from you guys? And I slam the door. And like right before I close the door, I could just see their faces just like, ugh. Because I said it in that very kind of, I said it in a very New York kind of way. Yeah. How many fucking miles I got to travel to get away from you fucking guys, right? And so, I you know, it was so great, right? It was so great. And then, a week later, Trey.
No, that soon?
I'm walking near the train station in Heidelberg. And while I'm walking on the street, there I just had parked my car. There's like, at that time, they still had adult video houses or whatever. Like a place where you could go in and rent, let's say, adult videos, right? Yeah. And so I'm walking down the street and I'm like approaching one of these places. And as I go to walk by, to go in and rent all the videos, right?
Yeah.
And as I walk by, those two Mormon missionaries walked out of there.
Oh, yes.
And but it was like something scripted in a movie because you could not have had better timing, right? Because for sure, these two guys 100% remembered me because I gave them a very traumatic experience in the middle of Ziegelhausen, right? Okay. And they walk out and then they stop at the bottom of the stairs and I look at them and they look at me and then I just stop and I turn my head to the adult video store and then I look back at them. And I just go, in English, you know, unbelievable. And I just kept walking. And it was so great. It was so, I wish, you know, this was like back in the old, I wish we had cell phones back then that had cameras, because this would have been so great.
No, it's not what it looks like.
Yeah, it's not what it looks like. We were in there, you know, trying to talk to the good lady about the Church of Yoda or whatever, right?
Yeah, you're spreading something.
So anyway.
Wow.
All right. What else we got?
Spread the good word. Oh, man. Good times. Next up, man. Next up, we got Eric Salinas. Alex. Okay, this is... Let me scroll down, because this is a hefty one?
Hefty
read.
Oh, all here right. We go.
Alex. Love your podcast listen to your show as I work out and drive. So he works out
and drives
at the same time.
It's multitasking. Yeah,
on it.
It's multitasking.
I completed my training in Wing Chun, Choi Lai Phut, and now continue to train Hopgar.
All right.
Okay. I have mentioned before people should always complete an art before expressing strengths and weaknesses. Bill G has always been expressed as an emergency form, meaning if your center line is compromised or utilizing thrusting fingers into the eyes or throat. However, one thing I have not seen in Wing Chun is covering or defending against overhead 12 to 6 or uppercuts 6 to 12. Hopgar and Choi Lai Phut utilizes these strikes, which emphasizes power and penetration. If an individual does not have any training outside of Wing Chun and is challenged or sparring, what Wing Chun techniques do you recommend and or should they consider alternative techniques from other styles? There's another part, but let's...
So I don't know of a Wing Chun style that doesn't teach 12 to 6 or 6 to 12 how to defend against those kind of punches. That's pretty part and parcel to what we do. But the Wing Chun style is designed to fight against other styles of martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
Many Wing Chun schools focus only on Wing Chun versus Wing Chun Chi Sao, right? That is a fault of many of the training methods of the modern schools. But when, for example, here at City Wing Chun, when we teach the students to spar, it's always, okay, you do Wing Chun and the other person is non-Wing Chun. So that person can fire jab, cross, hook, overhead swing, uppercuts, jab into takedown, kicks, all the kind of stuff that's going to happen, right? And this is not something from like my super duper modern perspective. I mean, this is something that's kind of been part of the way it's been done in the Leung-Ting system for a very long time. The 12 to 6 overhand punch is something that is not addressed in some of the lines of Wing Chun, but it is certainly addressed in the Leung-Ting Wing Chun, and even the Chumkyo had been modified to take, it's actually a knife movement which we use, which we have retrofitted as a hand technique. And it's very effective, not to mention the fact that body movement, like, first of all, even if you didn't know how to close the gap with Mansao against an overhead swing, there are lots of different things that you can do in terms of positioning and head movement and body position to avoid a punch like that. Mm-hmm. Uppercuts, you know, you deal with them using a number of different techniques. None of this stuff is super special, in my opinion, to the line of WT, but I think that if I would be reticent to say I completed the Wing Chun system and have not known how to defend those punches, then I think something is off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. I have used both Wing Chun and Choi Lai Phat in sparring, challenges, and in security work. Wing Chun is very practical against one or two opponents if your back is against the wall. Choi Lai Phat and Hop Gar are great in open areas and multiple opponents. Wing Chun is also amazing against BJJ. Thoughts?
Good. Great. Sounds good.
All right. All right. All right. Next up, we got Christian Creasy
in the house.
All right. Great episode. When it comes to practicing our WT kicks, do you recommend practicing on the heavy or kicking bags instead of practicing kicking nothing in midair?
Well, I would recommend actually doing all of the above, right? Because there's no one method that is going to make you great at a certain skill. You have to always attack every single skill from multiple angles, right? So, for example, in kicking, I think it's very useful and beneficial to practice kicking in the air. You know, it doesn't mean you kick full power, obviously, but to work on the technique, to work on the mobility, to be able to hold your leg out there in the end range position, whether you're doing that through the Chumkyu form or on the wooden dummy, or you're doing just kicking in the air to make sure that the knee travels on the correct path, the extension is done in the right way, that you're hitting with the heel, all that stuff. So don't underestimate the value of solo technical training, right? If you can lift your kick up very slowly, launch the kick out very slowly, and hold it there without your leg falling down, without stumbling over, that means that you own the movement in the end range position, and you need to be able to do that, right? Many people, when they kick in the air, they kick really fast, not because their kick is so fast, but because they don't actually have the strength to hold their leg there for a very brief moment, which means that the kick is not going to really be that powerful. It has to be done quickly because they literally can't hold their leg, right? Of course, in fighting, you're not going to hold your leg out there, but we're talking about technical practice. We're not talking about your death match when you're going to be using this kick, right? Mm. So one, I think solo training is still very very beneficial, and talk about a lot of these things in my movement book, Martial Arts Movement for Wing Chun, available at citywt.com. I have a whole section on improving your legs and your lower limbs for kicking. But then, obviously, if you want to train for power, you need to train against something. I think the wall bag is actually the better one to start with, because the wall bag is not going to move. You have the wall behind it, and that is a really good way to both not only improve the power of the kicking leg, but more importantly, the supporting leg that you're standing on, right? Because since the wall doesn't move, if you give a wall bag a really hard kick and your supporting leg is weak, you're going to fall over. So the diagnosis is not like my kick is too strong. The diagnosis is your supporting leg is too weak, right? Because your kick, especially in Wing Chun, where you have a relatively upright posture when you kick, your kick is only as strong as the supporting leg.
Okay.
So you need to do a lot of wall bag kicking where you have a stationary target that will not move. And the harder you kick it, the better you have to be able to dampen that power into the ground. Single leg stance training, where you just stand on one leg for various periods of time, whether it's through the entire Siunam Tao form or for 30 seconds, 1 minute, 2 minute, however you want to do it.
I like doing a Chumkyu single leg style.
Single leg Chumkyu is the best, right?
Yeah, I love that.
That is also extremely beneficial. And I think once you feel that you really have a nice powerful kick on the wall bag, you can stand on one leg very strongly and you can hold your leg out there for a decent amount of time. Then you should also do kind of more traditional heavy bag training, right? The heavy bag is great because obviously you have a lot more weight and it moves and it's a lot more dynamic than a wall bag. The wall bag is better, in my opinion, for developing the tendon and ligament strength to be able to do the Wing Chun kick well and powerfully. The heavy bag is better for learning how to do it against a moving, more dynamic target, right? So I think all of these methods should be used. And also don't underestimate the power of a good kick shield, having your partner hold a kick shield and moving at you the way an opponent is going to move at you. Another option, but you have to be able to kick a little bit higher. Normally in Wing Chun, we kick to the legs, but you have to be able to kick to your partner's body. For this one to work is that they have some, it's not a chest protector like for sparring. It's actually a kick shield that you wear on your on your body. You see boxing or kickboxing coaches wear this, right? They have mitts and then their student or their trainee can kick or punch them in the body full power because that thing is like quite thick, right? So it's kind of like they're kick shields that you can wear made by like Everlast or Rings or something like that. And those are really tricky because, you know, if your partner is basically wearing a kick shield and they can launch, like they can move towards you and you now have to kick a moving target, right? Mm-hmm. So now you have to adapt the foot angle and the positioning and everything to land on a non-flat target, right? But I wouldn't start with something like that, right?
Because that kick relatively high.
Like you do the solo training and you do the single leg stance training and then you do the wall bag training and then you do the heavy bag training and then you start doing kick shield and more dynamic style kick training. So then you build it up. And when you feel you've maxed that out, then go right back from the beginning again. Go back to your solo training, improve that, improve your single leg stance strength, improve your wall bag kicking, then go back to the heavy bag and kick shield and all that stuff and then go back again. So I think sometimes people think of progression as like it can only go this way. Sometimes the best thing to do when you've gone through a progression is to start it again from the beginning and now go through that same progression but now you're more skilled, you're more experienced, and you can now push those foundational skills and then bring it up a notch that way too. So you shouldn't neglect the idea of revisiting fundamentals, because all we have are fundamentals.
Okay.
And that's all I gotta say about that. All right, everyone, I hope you liked that episode of The Kung Fu Genius. And as always, if you have questions or anything you want me to talk about on a upcoming episode, go ahead and write them in the comments below. And I'll see you guys next time.
Word is I'm a Kung Fu genius. Technique speaks for me, not lineage. Forget Jet Li, cause I'm the one. Many call me Sifu, but to you I'm Si Kung. And I produce masters, you surpassed us. Your Kung Fu stiffer than corpse and caskets. City Wing Chun is the house I built. Violate the gate and your blood gets spilt. Alex Richter, always the victor.
Yeah, I know, your video is a few second or two behind mine. That's okay. Andrew's a professional, unlike you. We're recording
Andrew,
audio?
Andrew's good, man.
So you will be wearing this after I wore the tux.
Oh, for real?
Or maybe not. No, that's fine. No, we'll do this one before. That makes sense. Whatever.
Fuck it.
Who cares? There's no continuity in the Kung Fu Genius. It was supposed to culminate with the tux, and you just keep...
You're right.
You just keep fucking with me. Sorry, Andrew. You're going to have to cut all this nonsense out.
Sorry, Andrew.
Bible salesman here.
Actually, you said that shit. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, it's true. Right. It's true.
Lots of fantasy kung fu characters. Fantasy kung fu characters?
You got it right.
Like, all right, peeps. Oh, goodness.
All right, let's do it.
Lots of gems. Lots of
fantasy kung fu characters.
Lots of fantasy kung... Lots of fantasy... Lots of fantasy kung fu characters. Lots of the triads got paid less than them prostitutes on Enter the Dragon.
Lots of fantasy kung fu characters.
Fantasy. Lots of fantasy. Lots of fantasy kung fu characters. Lots of, yo, the triads got paid less than the prostitutes on ETD, Enter the Dragon. Let's get to it.
Why just say End of the Dragon, don't say ETD.
ETD, right? I don't know why. Just sounds like, it's right there on my screen.
Yeah.
Bravo.
Yeah, it's like erectile tactical dysfunction.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Nah. Never want to have that. Okay, let's get to it.
I know him so well, I could tell he was losing it in that last line, and he kind of brought it together, all right?
Like, good save.
Yeah, good save, but I can tell when you're mucking. No, I can tell when you're mucking around. All right, here we go.
Coast that shit. All right, peeps.